This is recording number A1. I am inserting it ahead of recording number 1 because of its importance to report a new finding which will affect the rest of this update on the repository. In the repository which follows, you will find a table. It's a table I created which lists all of the governance documents top down, starting with the Articles of Incorporation in New York State, all the way through down to the lowest level below the Ethics and Member Conduct Committee Operations Manual. I provided a link directly after this short audio clip, which if you click, it'll take you to the governance document. It's important to see that and review that first. I did this to provide continuity as to what is the authority being ignored up to date for denying ethics advice and ethical support to our members. And I believe I have found the root of this, and that's what this insertion is going to report now. This, I believe, is important enough for me to state that my findings will override all of the discussion which follows, wherein examination of the bylaws, the policies, the manual for operating the Ethics Member Conduct Committee, all were examined, trying to find what is the real authority for denying or providing ethics advice and ethical support. I believe I have found the root foundation for this. So let me explain this as I see it. First of all, in the mid-1980s, the Ethics Committee had come into creation. One of the things that did of a positive nature, it had the membership criteria changed such that in order to join or rejoin the IEEE, a member had to agree to abide by the Code of Ethics on the one hand. And on the other hand, in reply to that, and in exchange for doing that, Canon number 10 requires IEEE members, which is the organization, to support members who need support to in order to follow the Code of Ethics. In other words, there is created a contract relationship and requirement between the members and the organization. If you do this in exchange for that, I will do the following. In this case, when the members join and provide and pay a fee for services, they agree that they will abide by the Code of Ethics. In exchange for that, the Institute, which is the membership governed and run by the members under the governance documents, agrees that it will support the members in trying to abide by the Code of Ethics. In other words, and this is the most important statement I can make, a legal contract agreement gets established between the members and the Institute. The members do one thing, in exchange for that, the Institute agrees to do something else for them. That is a legal binding agreement, something we have overlooked, for 40 some years. Well, I believe that is the most important criteria to date. It overrules the bylaws, the policies. In other words, it's a contract agreement. That's how I see it. Now, to make sure of the relevance of what I just said, I researched again the criteria for joining the IEEE, and in the Code of Ethics, which was just revised again in 2020, Canon 10 still remains as it was written, essentially from the beginning, in the near term, which was around 1974, it still requires the Institute to support the members trying to abide by the Code of Ethics. So both those criteria still exist in writing today, have not changed, and are in effect. Now, let me caution the membership. It's going to be up to you, the members, to keep a good eye on what the various boards and the executive committee in the future do in this matter, because they may want to make changes to actually change this so that it does not require providing ethics advice and ethical support. Later, I will discuss with you the mechanism you have, the power you have to control this. So watch for it. It is my personal and professional view that since the early days, which was when there was only the AIEE, IRE had not quite come into being, the business interests got control of our board of directors over the founders, which were practicing professionals, and to this date basically have exerted this control. They did not want, in the early days of creating the Member Conduct Committee, to have ethical advice or ethical support provided to the members. They only wanted to build discipline. Well, that was overruled by the United States Activities Board in 1977, when the Board of Directors and the United States Activities Boards were negotiating the creating of the Member Conduct Committee, because I was personally involved in the creation of this, along with Dr. Steve Unger, Victor Zores, and others on the committee. And I made the presentation to the board of the USAB position, which was discipline, advice, and support. The board members only wanted to discipline. Well, the result was all three got approved, and that's what created the Member Conduct Committee. And it practiced that for 20 years successfully until 1997, 98, when the executive committee and the board chose to eliminate the ethics committee, all proactive ethics members, and got the ethics advice and ethical support terminated. Now, as a result, this is where we stand today. We have now the combined ethics and member conduct committee, and since 1998-2000, ethics advice and ethical support have been denied members, and only member discipline has been provided, just like what the board of directors originally back in the early 70s wanted. They just wanted to discipline. So I'm concerned that unless the members are vigilant and keep an eye on this, it could be changed and eliminated. Now, here is some of my thinking on a mechanism to prevent this. There's one organization in the IEEE which I feel has not really done what it's empowered to do, and that is the Society on the Social Implications of Technology. It is a neutral organization that's not bound by any particular technology, and it has ethics in it. It has an ethics committee. It makes the Barris Awards to members who for outstanding service in the public interest. So my thought is the following. The Society on the Social Implications of Technology, the SSIT, could become a watchdog over the Ethics and Member Conduct Committee and these various governance documents that fall in the area of affecting discipline, ethics advice, and ethical support. In so doing, it should keep an eye on the existence of this agreement between members when they join or rejoin, and they're agreeing to practice in accordance with the Code of Ethics on the one hand, and the obligation of the Institute to provide them support when called upon in order to abide by the code, that needs to be maintained and protected above all else. The SSIT could be the one that would take the lead as an organization to get any change in the Constitution proposed, pushed through, and passed to maintain that agreement. It's important that that agreement be established and maintained, because through modifying the various bylaws and policies and statements in the Ethics and Member Conduct Committee, this agreement between the members and IEEE under Canon 10 could be cut and eliminated. If that's done, the membership always have the last power of control, and that is to amend the Constitution. This was done in 1972 and 73 by the membership by a vote of over 82-83% in favor. And that's what established for the first time the IEEE will engage not only in technical activities, because that's all they did for the first 50, 70 years, but now it would, starting in 1973, would add professional activities, including ethics. And that's how we got into ethics advice, ethical support, and the Member Conduct Committee.